is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Wade, it opens wide for Wade. What a dunk! Fournier blocked his dunk! Here's Wade to get screen. Eurostep. Basket.
Welcome to the Heat Check. I'm Wes Goldberg. With me, as always, it's David Ramil. How you doing, buddy?
I'm opting in and ready for our podcast.
You're opting in. That's good news. So our contract negotiations, everything's fine on your end? You're willing to take less money for the team?
Absolutely. That's just the kind of player I am. I think my reputation speaks for itself.
So we're having this podcast basically all about Dwayne Wade and this whole situation. So it started, if you've been living under a rock, with Barry Jackson, the Miami Herald, reporting that Wade and the Miami Heat have come to an impasse of sorts in their contract negotiations. And today, Dan Le Batard published an article about just more about what's going on in that situation. So David and I are just going to talk about it. But first, I think we should preface with the fact that we just really don't know anything, right?
Based on what Jackson's statements were, he sourced three people. He didn't say what their relationship to him was, whether they had a relationship with Wade or Henry Thomas, Wade's agent, or perhaps they were an insider in the Heat's front office. So we don't know where the source is, but apparently there's some kind of an impasse. But we don't know much more than that. Whether or not that means that Wade wants more money annually, whether he wants the multi-year deal that was rumored to be on his wish list, we're not quite sure where we stand as that. So a lot of people are, you know, fearing the worst. And I think that was part of the tone of Jackson's headline and the article in general, and that he's open to leaving the team. But we don't really know that. And I don't think he said that. I don't think Henry Thomas said that. So it's a lot of conjecture on that part, but I understand the need to create a sensationalist headline. It certainly worked, but it also had most of Heat Nation crapping their respective pants.
And I think a lot of speculations happened since then, and I think one of the most popular things is suggesting what kind of contract and what kind of the Heat and Wade should work out, right? And the most popular one that I'm seeing is pay him whatever, the most you could possibly pay him this year. Opt in for 1 year at a higher salary and then work it out to the point where after a 1 year deal, he's making less money over the next 2 years, because the idea is that he wants to play for three more years. I think that's another assumption or educated guess that a lot of people are making. So, but that's what everybody's kind of suggesting, that makes more sense because overall, he'd be making more money than he would have if he'd be opting into this contract, right, over the span of 3 years. So, and I understand that, but we don't know where Wade stands. We don't know if Wade wants to do that. We don't know if Wade wants to sign two more contracts or if he's just opting out early because he just wants to sign his last contract of his career. We don't know what his priorities are, like you're saying. We don't know if he's done dealing with free agency and he just wants to sign one more contract to finish out the rest of his career, if he wants to make, if he's not going to be happy making max money this year and not max money for the next 2 years, if he's really looking for max money for the rest of his career, then that's not going to work either. So we don't know where Wade stands, and we're going to try our best not to assume where he is going to stand. So this is kind of tricky waters to navigate because we want to try to talk about this, but without making any assumptions.
Yeah, and it's interesting that this comes on the heels of some talk from earlier this offseason where he said that he had a clear date in mind that only he, his wife, and I think his immediate family knew about regarding retirement. I guess a lot of players or a lot of media had brought up, you know, whether or not he was ready to retire based on his health issues. And he said, no, not yet. I still have a few good years left in me. I know when I want to retire, and I've got a clear date in mind. And he seems to be one of those players that has enough burning on other fronts where he doesn't necessarily need to be invested in retiring and then wanting to come back and feeling like there's some kind of a void left as a result of the retirement. I think he's got enough interest outside of basketball and enough of a future where he doesn't necessarily need basketball. So I think that's part of where that three-year window comes into. But again, that is speculation on Jackson's part. He's the one that mentioned that three-year number. But it does seem to make sense, given his history of injury, given the productivity that he had this past year. You could probably guess that we're going to see at least another three good years out of Wade, in varying degrees. You know, obviously he's lost some weight, which is always a good thing. He dropped the pounds during the past 30 days or something.
The 30-day transformation, and he lost a little bit more than 10 pounds. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it gave him an opportunity to paint his toenails.
Yes. And, a very gothic black might we had.
Yeah. What, is that a thing now? Because I know that similarly, there was some gnarly pictures of Shaquille O'Neal getting a pedicure, and he had some real weird painted crusty thing going on with his toenails. Is this an NBA thing?
This is not something I want to get into.
Okay. Are we segueing too much?
I just don't like to talk about toes.
Oh, that's a whole other issue. Because I wonder, I'll just bring it up right now. No, I don't want to go in too deep, but if any of our female listeners, of which I'm sure there are plenty, can make a point, is toenail polish a way of maybe strengthening the overall, increasing the integrity of the toenail somewhat? Because I figure NBA players, they're on their feet all the time, and you hear about a lot of problems. When they have a moment to rest, they're going to rest with their feet up because they want to stay off their feet as much as possible. And part of that is probably protecting toes and toenails. So maybe the whole toenail polish is a way of, increasing the strength of the toenail.
That's a hypothesis I haven't heard before. I mean, you are technically adding another layer to it. I wonder if there's like a special, maybe that's why it's black. Maybe it's like a special toenail polish that keeps your toes from like chipping or something.
Yeah, it's like Kevlar for your toenails.
I haven't heard that one before. One thing I have heard, if anybody has an answer to this, it would be fascinating to learn. But I have heard this hypothesis is that basically, okay, so I'm under the assumption, I think a lot of people are under the assumption that there is a whole other world where millionaires and billionaires live, and they just do things that we just don't understand. They have technology, they operate in ways, they live different lives than us other humans. It's a different, completely different lifestyle and life experience, right?
Yeah, I like it.
So, I mean, my thought was that since history dating back way in Egypt and stuff like that, I heard that people have been painting their toenails, like the highest class of a species, have been painting their toenails for years, since history, okay? I think that's a fact. That's just an historical thing, right? Maybe this is just something rich people do. Maybe if you looked at every guy who, or every, well, I don't think it's rare for among women, but if you look at among the male population that makes a certain amount of millions, maybe they just all paint their toenails. And it's just a thing that they do that we're just not accustomed to as just regular folk.
Look under, Bill Gates, quality, top-notch, topsiders, and you're bound to find some lacquered nails.
100%.
Okay, good to know. Right. I hadn't known about this. Obviously, I am not in the 1%, and so I'm not able to tell you, but there's a very good chance if the Illuminati is listening to our podcast, why wouldn't they? There's a good chance you're going to get a knock on the door within the next 5 minutes, so stay tuned for what happens to Wes.
I'm just out of the Illuminati. It's really funny that you went to that conclusion, because I was thinking Illuminati too.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, now that we got the toenails and everything out of the way, I think this whole situation with Wade kind of opens up this general idea of star players in the NBA taking less money. And it's an interesting thing, and Dan Le Batard got to this in his column, that Wade, LeBron, and Bosh kind of set this precedent of taking less money in order to bring in more/better role players to team up with them and chase these championships, right? So we've seen guys like Dirk Nowitzki and Tim Duncan do similar things where they take less money for the better of the team. But the NBA, and maybe I'm mistaken, but I can't really think of another sport where the best players are getting paid oftentimes. The best player on the team is not the highest paid player on the team. And they take less money, you know, in order to benefit the team so that the team can make, you know, have more flexibility in their personnel decision making. I mean, you look at the NFL, Tom Brady goes and gets his. You know, Joe Flacco went and got his. Peyton Manning goes and gets his. Baseball, I mean, these guys are paid absorbent amounts of money. It's just ridiculous. So, it's kind of an interesting situation here. And on the heels of one union owner negotiation, something another, we might be getting to another situation here where this is a critical juncture in these negotiations. Something that Tom Ziller of SB Nation talked about, the next war, I guess the next front, right? So this is kind of a larger situation here.
But, I mean, that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the best player on their team being paid more. I mean, even in those other sports, you have guys that are outrageously paid that might just be in the middle of a bad deal. Like, you know, let's say, you know, something happens to Giancarlo Stanton with the Marlins, he's still getting paid twice as much as any other player. I mean, we're looking at it with their closer, not to go too deeply into baseball, but I think Steve Cishek is the second highest paid player on their team, and he leads the majors in blown saves. So, I mean, this is clearly a situation where he's getting paid way too much money.
Yeah, the Marlins are garbage.
Well, that's a whole other story. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know if necessarily the highest paid player in each team in every sport is always their best player, but that's neither here nor there. I guess the point is that Wade has never been the highest paid player.
Well, the real point is that Wade has taken less money in the past, and it seems like he's being asked to do so again now, and it's just something that keeps happening in the NBA where these players kind of just the way the salary cap is structured, these players have to take less money if they want to be on a contending team, or that's at least what it seems like, right? So, I mean, Duncan had to take less money if the Spurs wanted to, you know, maintain that roster, keep Manu and keep Tony Parker and pay Kawhi and Tiago Splitter and all these guys. I mean, Splitter's making almost as much money as Duncan, if not more, right? I mean, it's like the way that they're getting paid so close to amount. It's strange. It's not something that we see in other sports where, you know, the leaders on the team are getting paid close to what these other role players are getting paid. And it's something that the last players union kind of negotiated. It was role players over star players. And because there's many more role players in the NBA than star players, and because, as Ziller pointed out in his really good column, the last players union was basically ran by role players, a.k.a. Derek Fisher. They kind of had more of a voice, but now that the players' union is represented by Chris Paul and LeBron James, now they're voiced by two of the biggest stars in the league. And I wonder if this is something that's going to change in the future.
It's an interesting perspective. I don't know. I mean, when you look at Wade's, and I think the comparison to Dirk and Tim Duncan that everybody has made, and I think the argument is also those were players way past their prime by the time they took much less deals, much lower deals than they could have. So Wade is still far more productive than either Duncan or Nowitzki at this point in his career. So, and again, he did take less money in 2010 when he was clearly at his peak. So that argument that some star players have taken less money doesn't necessarily apply to Dwayne Wade, and certainly didn't in 2010. How it affects the future of the league, I guess the issue is, you know, there's so much money coming into the NBA. Clearly, we're going to see an expanded salary cap, an increased salary cap next season. But there's more than enough money to pay everybody everything that they want. Mm-hmm. And that's a little dangerous, though, because then who decides who's a superstar and who's a role player and who gets what based on productivity? I mean, I think that when we're looking at Wade specifically, and this is why a lot of the fan base cries, you know, that they want him to get whatever he deserves. Does he really deserve that max level contract, though?
And that's really the heart of the debate, right? Do you pay a player for what they've done? Because nobody would say necessarily that he's worth the max right now. But, and I think that's what the Heat are banking on in negotiations. Again, not trying to assume anything, but if Wade is to hit free agency, the idea is that he's not going to get a max deal anywhere else. That the only team he's going to be able to get a max deal from is Miami. And therefore, Miami would be paying for him for his legacy, what he's accomplished, the money that he's given up. Wade might be looking to make that money back. So that money that he had given up in the past. So that's really the larger debate. I kind of want to backtrack a little bit, though, to the salary cap in general. The reason players have to do this is because we have max contracts, because we have hard cap rules in the NBA. Do you think we should just eliminate the salary cap? I'm under the impression, I don't know how realistic this is, and I really haven't dug too deep in it, but if the NBA is a star league, and it's always been driven by stars, and we understand that, and there's not that many of them, if we eliminate the salary cap completely, or at least the max contract, and just allow teams to pay players what they want to pay them, almost like baseball, is that just a, is that a catch-all? Does that fix the situation if you're allowed to pay LeBron James $100 million a year?
It puts the onus on team management to make sure that they'll build the right team.
Right, and that's what the NBA has done in the past. They've put rules in place to save these teams from themselves, right?
Right.
Like, the owners vote, and that's great and all, but we look at, I mean, Michelle Roberts with the NFL, the NBA PA, and all these guys, and now that it's, like I said, ran by star players, essentially, I wonder if this is what's going to change, if they're going to push at least for a higher salary cap, maybe getting, even if it's a, maybe if it's not a no salary cap league, but a high salary cap without max contracts, maybe closer to what the NFL is doing. Maybe that's a better situation. Maybe getting rid of the luxury tax that kind of failed as a system overall. That I think, I don't know, who's going to vote in favor of a luxury tax right now? I mean, do owners necessarily want the luxury tax? Do the players certainly don't want the luxury tax, right? Because their players have been getting cut because of the luxury tax or traded because of the luxury tax. I wonder if the luxury tax is something that was just an experiment that's going to go away.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, it almost still benefits the players, right? Because they still wind up collecting, I mean, if they wind up getting amnestied as a result of the luxury tax, they still wind up getting paid, and that puts them in a position where they can still be free agents and they can sign with another team and collect two or three paychecks at a time in some cases.
Yeah, but I think that was more rare, and especially because amnesty was a one-time use thing. I'm thinking more like guys like Mike Miller, who had to get traded from one team to another just because they didn't want to pay the luxury tax. I mean, we've talked about like the outside lives of players, like the impact of getting traded and
sure,
these trips and on their families and everything like that. I mean, that's a real thing that players just don't want to deal with. So I wonder if I don't know if it's necessarily benefiting them, and if owners wanted to get rid of the luxury tax, I guess more the point, if you're looking at this from a negotiation standpoint, the players aren't going to be like, whoa, 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 no, we got to keep the luxury tax, guys. So if the owners kind of want to eliminate it, I think the players would be like, all right, that's cool.
Interesting.
Unless they just make up some sort of hill to die on, and they're like, no, we need to keep the luxury tax, but we'll give you this if you just give us something back in return, which is probably what would happen.
That is a possibility.
But anyway, not to get too much into the salary cap and all this stuff, but let's talk about Dwayne Wade and him staying. Do you think, where do you side on this whole argument?
It's kind of interesting because I don't know. I really don't know where I stand. I feel like part of me is torn between a loyalty to Wade and everything that he's done for the organization and just the rationalization that as a human being, he's certainly within his rights to get paid whatever he wants to get paid or whatever he feels he deserves. You know, the market dictates what his worth is, but that he's willing to exploit it in his benefit. And that makes sense. You know, we hold players and athletes to this regard that it's impossible for us to live up to, where, you know, if you have the opportunity to go work elsewhere at, you know, $10 million more than you're getting paid now, who the hell is going to say no to that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is no, there shouldn't be any loyalty in a business like the NBA, but yet the reality is that sports are completely different, that we worship them, that we obsess over teams, that they drive so much of our lives, not just you and me in particular, but a lot of people are obsessed with sports. And so it's hard to say whether or not, you know, Wade shouldn't make a sacrifice on half of the team, because again, then you have to weigh whether or not it's a fun team. As I saw some people tweeting out that maybe there's more value in having a fun, entertaining team with Wade at its core rather than necessarily competing for championships. But you know, it's tough to say. I'm really torn about it, because I have no idea whether or not I think Wade deserves this kind of money. Again, based on his injury issues, whether or not he's going to be as productive a player next year, whether or not that hinders the team from signing a guy like Whiteside or Dragic this year, or you know, pie in the sky Kevin Durant in 2016, etc. There's a lot to take into consideration there, so I'm really torn about which way I prefer. Given that, if you had to ask me right now how I feel, I would want Wade to stay, even if you wanted to pay him a little more than the $16 million he was owed. But I don't think I'd want to go full max and pay him $24 million or $23 million, whatever the max number is. I just don't think that – I don't know that he's necessarily worth it at this point in his career, and $24 million is – we're talking about a difference of $8 million, which he makes, you know, in a matter of days because of his Chinese shoe deal and all the other things that he's hawked over the course of his career. So if you're asking me my opinion, I think that you pay him a little bit more and make it as flexible as possible. Now, if you're asking me what my opinion is of what's going to happen, that's a little different. I think he winds up taking a three-year deal for about $15 million per, which winds up paying him more over the lifespan of that 3 years, but less per year than he would if he had just remained at the 16.1 he was owed this season.
Well, I want to talk about the hypothetical of Wade leaving a little bit later, but I tend to agree with you. I think what's going to happen here is, not knowing anything, again, just a preface, but I think that $15 million number might be a little low. I think I'd lean a little closer to $18 million a year, and I think that's an overpay, but I think 3 years, $18 million. So if we're looking at this from a negotiation standpoint, both teams, both sides kind of have something to go off of. Wade saying, look, I took less than a max deal in 2010, and we brought LeBron and Bosch. Also, according to Lebatard, he took less money to keep Haslam in Miami. So it's like, look, I took less money for Haslam, and I took less money for Bosch and LeBron. You know, it's time to pay me back for that money that you owed me back then, right? And now the Heat can kind of come back and say, well, look, you missed a third of your games the last 2 years. You know, you took less money, but you also won championships. So there's a point to, you know, not making that money. That was kind of your trade-off. So there's both sides kind of have something to go off of here. And that's what kind of makes it so tricky, is if you really want to decide with Wade, you know, I could talk you into that. But if you really want to decide with the Heat, I could talk you into that too. And it's kind of a rare situation that we're in, because, you know, this isn't the Lakers. This isn't Kobe and the Lakers front office, where a lot of people in LA just side with Kobe, period, end of story. But in Miami, there's such, you know, people revere Wade, but people also revere the Heat's management. We love Pat Riley and everything that happens there. So even on an emotional sense, it's hard to split. So I think that's why it's so hard to come at this. But yeah, overall, what I think is going to happen, Wade stays. It's so hard to imagine Wade leaving. Wade stays, and I think it's going to be something a little, I think they're going to have to overpay him.
It seems so atypical of, again, that constant, or not, maybe not constant, but the sacrifices he's made in the past. And it's like, why drag your heels in the sand now? At this point in your career, when your bargaining position is as weak as it's ever been, why would you make a stand now as you're nearing the end of your career? Is it really all about money? Is it all about respect? Is it all about wanting to be the highest paid player on your team for the first time ever? I don't know. I mean, it's hard to imagine the ego that drives this kind of request, which we don't even know is an official request.
Right. But do you think that Wade thought, do you think he imagined finishing his career with LeBron on his team? Because I really do think that LeBron James going to Cleveland did put a wrench in everything. I think the plan in 2010 was to take these kind of short-term deals, taking less money, and that's why Wade maintained his flexibility, in, just in case something like this LeBron situation going back to Cleveland happened, was so that if push came to shove, LeBron left, or Bosch left, or something happened with this trio, Wade could go and get more money later on. And that's why he's been taking these opt-out clauses, and again, just me assuming, but if the reason Wade took less money was to chase rings, if LeBron's in Cleveland now, and we don't know what kind of contender the Heat can build right now, it does make sense for Wade to now ask for more money as opposed to where in the past he was taking less money because he had the best player in the world next to him, and it was almost a virtual guarantee to make it to the finals as long as they didn't screw up.
Yeah, but why tweet out Heat Lifer? Why make himself set up as, you know, a stark contrast from LeBron James' decision to go back to Cleveland? That whatever worked for LeBron is fine, but that, as far as I'm concerned, and this was, you know, paraphrasing his line of thinking from last offseason, I want to stay here in Miami. Miami's my home. It's always been my home. This is the place I've played my career. This doesn't seem like a guy who really wants to get up and leave. Now, I mean, if we toss that out the window that he's going to figure out some way of staying in Miami somehow, some way, is it really just about money? I mean, is he going to force Pat Riley's hand to overpay him just so that he can stay here? It's so hard to rationalize this process because, again, it seems like it's coming at such a weird point in his career. And you're right that maybe the whole departure of LeBron James, you know, facilitated things a little bit. But at the same time, you know, he's played 60-something games, 62 games last season. He's probably going to sense, you know, unless the weight loss transforms his health dramatically, I think it's realistic to say that he's going to probably miss some games next year as well. I don't know. I really
and now we're wondering what's going on behind those closed doors. If there was a wink-wink negotiation idea for future contracts between him and Pat Riley. Or, I mean, I think there's a lot of things at play here that clearly we don't have any idea of. It's interesting. And maybe you just had a change of heart. Maybe all of a sudden you decided, look, Bosch went and got the max deal with the Heat. LeBron got a max deal with Cleveland. Now it's kind of time for me to get a max deal. Maybe he just had time to think about it after the season ended and he was watching what was going on in the playoffs. Or I don't know, maybe this idea of Dragic getting paid more than he's getting paid, and in the future, Hassan Whiteside likely getting paid more than he's going to be getting paid. If he does, if maybe he the plan was to take less money for the next 3 years. I don't know.
And in that case, then, if it's really about watching everybody else get theirs, it just kind of sucks, and it makes me want to feel for Wade a little bit less, in that it's all about ego and showing the rest of the NBA that you're still worthy of being a high-paid player, and about being able to brag about your number of millions, etc.
Maybe it is something like that, because Wade still is holding on to this idea that, and I'm not disputing it, but that he's the best shooting guard in the NBA, that he's still one of the best players in the NBA. He seems reluctant to give that up, even though he is clearly on the decline in the twilight of his career. I still consider him an all-star and one of the best players in the NBA. I don't think there's any doubt about that, but he's almost clinging on to that, right? There's kind of that sense. I mean, the whole quote-unquote feud with Kevin Durant over James Harden being the best shooting guard in the NBA. I mean, there seems to be a chip on his shoulder. It seems to be something that he prides himself in. And maybe getting a max contract is his way of saying, look, if Draymond Green is going to get a max contract, I should be getting a max contract.
Yeah.
So
it seems like a bad system, though, because, yeah, if you're that dependent on everybody else. But then to go to your point from earlier, you know, I know that they were past their prime or whatever, but, you know, Tim Duncan probably could have commanded a lot more money than he did, and so could Nowitzki.
Absolutely.
Why were they willing to make the accommodations that Dwayne Wade apparently does not feel like he's willing to make at this point in his career?
I don't know. And I don't know if Duncan and Dirk got their max deals in the past. And I'm sure they've respectively been the highest paid player on their teams at one point.
Oh, for sure. I know. Duncan was hours away from signing with the Orlando Magic back in the day.
That's right. So, yeah, there's just a lot of things. And I think it's unfair to compare one player to another, you know. It's just like, hey, Duncan took less money to keep things together. why wouldn't you? But we can also go on the flip side and say, well, Kobe asked for $24 million a year or whatever it is. And I know Wade's not, you know, Wade's not going to ask for like that, you know. Nobody's that egomaniacal. Not anybody other than Kobe, I don't think. Just to almost sign a contract to prove a point, even though everybody knows Kobe doesn't need that money. So,
I wanted to bring up the point that a lot of people have talked about now, how subconsciously or consciously, I don't know what the issue is, that when it comes to sports, we always tend to side with, or a majority of people tend to side with ownership, even though they wind up making their billions as opposed to only the millions that the players are making. And whether or not that's, like, do you feel that way? That do you feel like you tend to view ownership more favorably in labor disputes or contract disputes?
In labor disputes, I agree with that premise that people do tend to side with ownership more. And I think it's just because we see these players, we see them on a daily basis, we see them in a social setting, and we're like, this, I mean, Wade's driving around this car, and then he's driving around that car, he's at this gal, and he's at that gal, he's got a new outfit on every time we see him, and he's got all these sponsorships. It's like, well, this guy doesn't need any more money, you know what I mean? But it's also like, Mickey Arison is running a cruise line. He doesn't need any more money either. So I think it's just the fact that these guys are more visible to us, and it's actually more fun to debate these things than it is, you know, than the owners are visible to us, or we necessarily care how the owners are making their money. And it's just kind of this whole interesting thing. I mean, this is Wade's main job, but he makes much less money doing that than he does with all his side projects. And you got to think Mickey Arison is making more money running Carnival than he is running the Heat. So,
it's just technically he doesn't run Carnival anymore, right?
Yeah, well, whatever. But you know what I mean? It's so funny that these are their day jobs, but they're making less money doing it than they really are doing their side projects. So it almost makes this whole money thing, and I'm not in a position to say how much money anybody needs or deserves or should want, but it almost seems like this whole, you know, you work to make money, right? That's how normal people do things. But these guys, like, money is, like, not an issue for these people, necessarily, as far as a survival standpoint. And they kind of have, like, just an open checkbook all the time. They can just make money, it seems like, whenever they want. That it seems like this is never just about money. This whole, all these contract negotiations, anything like this, is never just really about money, right? Not when we get to this level. Or maybe it is.
I wanted to bring up a point about Mickey Arison, a story from a few years ago where I read that he actually still goes through the drive-thru lane at Burger King and orders a Whopper sandwich, but that his one request that sets him apart is that he wants it cut in half. And so that's why he knows that it ensures freshness. But it was like one of those things that weirdly is appealing about Arison is that, you know, he seems very much as much of an everyman as a billionaire can be, I guess. And so maybe it's a little easier to empathize with guys like him. And, you know, he's always been so actively involved in the organization, and he seems like a decent overall guy. Again, you know, despite the fact that he's an exploitive billionaire like most exploitive billionaires are, he seems like a pretty decent fellow. But it's just, I think, you know, when you're not looking at a guy like Donald Sterling, this is Mickey Arison. We want him to own the Marlins. We want him to own the Dolphins. We want him to own every team here because we love what he's done for the Miami Heat.
That's right.
So it's like you pointed out earlier, you know, the front office is beloved just as much as the player is. So it's a very conflicting issue for a lot of fans.
Let's talk hypothetically about Wade leaving.
No.
Did you say no?
Yes, I did.
All right. End of podcast. All right, we're going to do it anyway. So this whole situation, and it's not even close to the same situation, but it does remind me of when Paul Pierce left the Celtics. And everybody was like, Pierce was supposed to end his career as a Boston Celtic. And that's the situation with Wade, right? Like, he's supposed to end his career with the Heat, and there's just no way he's not gonna end his career in Miami. But Pierce left, went to Brooklyn, now he's with Washington.
Well, he was traded to Brooklyn.
Right, he was traded. So because it's a different Boston situation. But I think the entire what is similar to me is just this idea of these players just being Celtics lifers or Heat lifers or whatever.
Okay.
So just that, I just playing around with this idea, right? Or Let's in the NFL, Peyton Manning not ending his career on the Colts. I mean, stuff happens, right? Sure, all of a sudden, sure. Stuff just happens.
Joe Montana with the Kansas City Chiefs. You know?
Right, we can go way back. So,
yeah.
But I think just with this whole Paul Pierce situation, it was just like unfathomable. And now, if you talk to any Celtics fan, just 2 years removed from Pierce leaving, they're hopeful. I mean, this is a team hopeful of the future. They like the guys on that team. They don't love them like they loved Garnett, Rondo, or Pierce, but there's still a mass support for the Celtics and hope and appreciation for what they're doing and support for what they're doing and building. And I wonder if we kind of always face this immediate sting. Let's just say hypothetically Wade leaves, there's going to be a deep burn. There's going to be a sting, and it's going to be worse than when LeBron left. It's going to be bad, and it's going to suck. But after, you know, things happen in sports and teams figure out how to build after that. And I wonder, you know, where this team goes if Wade does leave and how long it takes for Heat fans, because it will happen, time heals all wounds, how long it takes for Heat fans to say, okay, this is what they're doing, this is how they're building. They're building around Whiteside and Bosch and Dragic. We're okay. Wade's great, and we could appreciate him somewhere else. We can appreciate him if he's in Detroit now. But we can't, like, but this is what we have, and we still support our team.
Well, I mean, you don't even have to go that far back, and you don't have to go to any other team other than the Heat themselves to make, you know, to answer that question.
That's true.
When Alonzo Mourning left Miami to play with the New Jersey Nets, a lot of people were, you know, destroyed by it because, you know, maybe that was a different situation because he had been dealing with his kidney health issues, and so he was kind of not as regular a presence on the court as he was off the court. So it's not quite the same thing to compare Wade and Zoe, but Zoe was the face of the franchise. You know, Pat Riley came in 95. His first move was to get rid of the former face of the franchise, Glenn Rice, acquire Alonzo, who became this grim warrior that carried the Heat through their defining years from 95 up until 2000. Then the diagnosis came after the Sydney Olympics in 2000, and then you have these kind of these years of mediocrity there where you're not quite sure what's going to happen with Zoe, whether he's going to be in and out of the lineup, you know, and then eventually he leaves after this drawn out negotiation process, not unlike what's happening here where Zoe wanted, apparently according to Levitard, he wanted to have the offer matched by Miami. They refused to do it because that was the salary cap situation was different, and they overpaid for Alonzo in New Jersey. He never wound up being the player that he was prior to that. That's a whole other story. But then, you know, the year after Alonzo left, Miami was terrible. 2002 to 2003 was horrible. But then the next thing you know, Miami's in the lottery. They get lucky, draft this kid named Dwayne Wade, who turned out to be pretty good. And that first year of Wade's career, I think a lot of older Heat fans would probably say it might be one of the best years that they've ever remembered. I mean, they didn't do anything. They made it to the playoffs. There was an upset over the Charlotte Hornets, if I'm not mistaken, or the Indiana Pacers. Did they upset Indiana or upset Charlotte? I can't remember which.
I can't remember either. Yeah.
Okay.
I think the first year was Charlotte, and I think we've had this discussion on this podcast before, is trying to remember who they upset that year.
Yeah. I mean, it was just an exciting time. You had Rafer Elston. You had Lamar Odom. You had a young Caron Butler.
Brian Grant.
Brian Grant, yeah, absolutely. Eddie Jones. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had like a very deep, fun team to watch. And although you loved the fact that, you know, Alonzo was there, that he was the road warrior as a team, as Eric Reed always likes to say, he was gone. He was in New Jersey or he was somewhere at that point in time getting his kidney replaced. But you loved that Heat team. The 2003, sure. 2014 was very exciting. And next thing you know, you break that up completely and acquire Shaquille O'Neal. Nobody shed over tears over the loss of Lamar Odom, Brian Grant, and Caron Butler.
And even more recently, LeBron James just left. And this team fell in love with this Heat team, right? We fell in love with Whiteside. We put Bosch on a higher pedestal. We got Goran Dragic, right? And he's the savior again. So I think Wade, just as a where he stands in this organization, though, is there's no doubt he's the greatest Heat player of all time. I mean, this would be the equivalent of, you know, Marino and the Dolphins not being able to negotiate a contract.
which was a possibility at one point. Everybody forgets that he was forcing a trade to his hometown Pittsburgh Steelers. Never happened, but right. His wife and his family and everybody wanted him to play in Pittsburgh. Everybody immediately forgets that when they're rewriting the legacy of Dan Marino, but whatever. It's a whole other issue.
So, it's interesting, but let's, like, on the court stuff, let's talk about if Wade isn't with Miami, what do they do? This kind of opens up this whole idea that they can get a three-point shooter, right? So, the issue with Wade, we love Wade. But the issue with Wade is he destroys the spacing, right? That's always been the thing.
Correct.
And it is something that I'm worried about because Dragic is a solid three-point shooter, but he's not a three-point shooter. Wade is not a three-point shooter by any stretch of the imagination. And then with Hassan Whiteside at center and Bosch at power forward, that's not quite the floor spacing five with Bosch at, you know, center and just Shane Battier or whoever at power forward that we were used to. That kind of helped mask Wade's lack of spacing ability. So, and if Dang is the small forward, he's kind of given up on being a three-point corner shooter right now too. So I think spacing's a major issue, just like we saw last year. So if you get rid of Wade, that opens up a new opportunity.
Sorry to interrupt here, but can we take a step back and say, I mean, what happens in the short term, like the very, very, very short term? You're talking about the team that we're going to field next year and as far as improved spacing, but does Dang opt in? Does Dragic re-sign with Miami?
Yeah, that's very true. I think Dragic would stay.
You do?
I do, because I think Riley sells him on the idea of pick and pops with Chris Bosh, Hassan Whiteside behind him on defense to secure the paint, and being able to fill out the roster around him and build the roster around him as opposed to building the roster around that backcourt. I think because if you're looking at Dragic, it's not like Dragic has the Heat and the Rockets, you know what I mean, to decide between. It's that or the really bad Knicks or the really bad Lakers or like another really bad team. So the Heat still, I think, are the best option even in a vacuum if all playing fields are neutral. But they're not because the Heat can also offer him the 5-year max. And I think if we see something similar to Bosch, right? If hypothetically Wade leaves, like LeBron left and the Heat just said, got Bosch on the phone and was like, here's the 5-year max, no questions asked, right? That's kind of been the idea. So if Wade leaves, we still don't know if Dragic is going to get the max or the 5-year max. But if Wade leaves, you know Riley's just going to get on the phone and it's like, here's the 5-year max, no questions asked, the team is yours.
What about Dang then?
Dang, I think, would opt out. And if that's the case, then we're looking at about $18 million in cap space, which is almost enough. They're going to have almost enough to offer a max deal to somebody, to a restricted free agent potentially. So they could go after Chris Middleton maybe. A nice 3-point spacer, 3-and-D kind of guy.
Interesting option. And then draft Kelly Oubre to start at small forward.
Yeah. Our boy Kelly Oubre. So... So I think you have the. I think there's definitely. It's interesting when you think about what would happen if Wade were to leave and Dang were to leave. This team is in position to make a lot of moves, if that were to happen. I don't think the best case scenario. You want a team with Wade. You know, I don't think any Heat fan would say they'd rather have Chris Middleton than Dwayne Wade. But, I'd be surprised if that were the case. But it doesn't. It does. I guess the point is that if Wade did leave, from an on-the-court standpoint, this team would still be okay. Which is kind of sad to think about, because and it kind of boils everything down to, this is a really, I think, primarily an emotional thing.
Yeah, it's not, you know...
And that's scary to think, because this is a business situation, and I think a lot of this is going to be driven by emotions.
Not from Riley's perspective. I can't see him being that driven by emotions.
That's true. I guess I should say the perception and speculation from fans is really driven by emotions, and that's why it's scary, right? Because emotions is driving the conversation, but when it comes down to it, we have no say in what happens, and this is a business thing. So that's right. Why something like Wade leaving, I think, seems impossible for us, and is why we expect Wade to stay. But that's because we're really kind of banking on the emotion side of this. Because if you think about where Riley's at, And again, going back to those Celtics with Paul Pierce, it was better for them to get rid of Paul Pierce, right? I mean, imagine them not making that Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett deal to with Brooklyn. They wouldn't have all these draft picks. They wouldn't be in the situation where they're at now. If they would have hung on to Paul Pierce and been emotional about it, this team is bogged down in the bottom of the standings. They are attached to, you know, expiring veterans, and they're not anywhere where they would probably hope to be. They're looking probably more similar to the Lakers than they are. Brad Stevens probably isn't there. They probably have a place for their coach. You know what I mean? There's probably just, like, this team is not as good or set up for the future as they are now. And that's kind of the scary part about it. And anything can happen with both of these. It's two completely different situations. But again, it's scary from our end because when it comes behind those doors, it's a business. And we're attacking this and expecting things on an emotional basis.
They're also lucky that Brooklyn had Billy King, who was
also true.
not the best negotiator there, and was willing to give up a whole hell of a lot for Garnett and Pierce.
But it makes you wonder what some of these teams would give up, right? I mean, what would the Knicks give up for Wade? What would the Pistons and Stan Van Gundy give away for Wade?
What do they have in Detroit?
Greg Monroe?
Sign and trade.
Are we past that idea? I mean, are we past the Greg Monroe to Miami idea?
I don't think he's as necessary as he was at the beginning of last season before Whiteside developed.
That's certainly true, but that would be a heck of a rotation. I just think there's a lot of things. I mean, obviously what they would do is probably chase first-round picks, right? Because they'd want to maintain that 2016 cap flexibility. So they're probably looking at draft picks or cheap assets or expiring deals or something, but... Or a superstar in return, but they're not going to get one for Dwayne Wade. A team that with a superstar isn't going to be chasing Dwayne Wade. So,
I was thinking about it from that fan's perspective. I mean, that's something to consider also from Riley. The business side of the Heat is going to take a big hit. No national appearances, or very few, let's say, without Wade there. Loss of season ticket sales, no doubt about it.
Well, that's kind of harps on to my other point, is how soon is it until the Heat forgive and forget and just get back into supporting this Heat team, right?
I mean, it depends on whatever team without Wade, assuming Wade leaves, whatever that team does next year without him will dictate. People will eventually gravitate toward the team if and when they're young, exciting, and start winning. I mean, that's the reality. I mean, as much as you'd love to say anybody isn't replaceable, the reality is that they did. And I want to think back to a team like Cleveland in 2010, but they had the whole FU LeBron kind of thing. It's like, oh, you want to see that we're not a loyal fan base? We're going to come out in droves anyway, and they didn't really. I mean, that was the only thing really fueling them was a hatred of LeBron James and Miami Heat at that point, and it wasn't enough to really drive the fans to see a team that won 16 games. I think they won 16 games that year without LeBron or whatever, something really pathetic. It's just, I don't know, the fans. Would you still be loyal to Miami without Dwayne Wade? A lot of people have said no. A lot of people seem to be voicing the concern on Twitter that a team without Dwayne Wade isn't one worth watching. And that seems one extreme that I'm not willing to go to either.
It really is tough because there are young fans who the only Heat team they know is a Dwayne Wade Heat team. And it's I don't know if it's to the extreme, but it's like the Lakers and Kobe Bryant. If Kobe wasn't on the Lakers, especially this version of the Lakers, how many fans switch to a Clippers fan or any other team or whatever team Kobe went to? A lot, right? So I don't think it's to that extreme, but I don't think there's any doubt that the Heat would lose support to some extent. But I don't know. It's really a tough conversation to have because, like I said, so much of it is driven by emotion on this end, where you know on the business angle, that's not really the case. I think I'm not saying that Pat Riley is so assassin-like that he's going to basically rule emotions out of it. I just don't see that. I think Pat Riley is an emotional guy. He's shown to be an emotional person. Dwayne Wade definitely has an affinity for Miami. I mean, this is his home. This is where he's played. I mean, not his home, but his home now. And this is where he's played for his entire career. There's definitely he wants to be here. He's said that many times. But So there is going to be emotion attached to the contract negotiation in some way, but I don't. It's not going to probably be as much as what we're injecting into this situation. And I don't know, because now I'm thinking, like, you think about Bill Belichick and the Patriots and the NFL. He just has a habit of trading players and getting something in return. And you look at what Danny Ainge did, and he traded Pierce and Rondo and Garnett. I mean, he traded those guys to get something in return and ended up being better for those situations. You wonder, like, if the Heat, if this is all about building, right? They're not going to want to give up 2016. They might be better off by trading Wade and getting assets in return for a team that doesn't have many of them and getting cap room now and in the future. If you're just looking at a long-term build, and if Wade's saying, look, I'm giving you 3 years, you're going to overpay me for 3 years, and that's it. It's like, how many – Riley has to sit back and think, how many championships are they going to win in those 3 years? This is a really tough situation. The easy thing is just to re-sign Wade, but, I mean, negotiations, you really have to think about things.
And should they – mutually agree to part ways, let's say there's no way that they're going to pay him as much money as he may or may not want at this point. You look at sign and trades, or would Wade just say, you know what, it's better for me to just sign with another team? How many teams can offer Wade the kind of money that he's theoretically asking for?
There's a few teams that could pay. I mean, the Lakers and Knicks could pay him.
Are those the only teams?
I'm sure there's more. The Sixers. I mean, there are teams that can clear room. If Chicago loses Jimmy Butler, they probably could. I'm not positive on that. Actually, probably not, because I think Butler's got bird rights, and that's why they're going to be able to be re-sign him. But yeah, because they're not even going to have enough money to re-sign Dunleavy, right? So.
But isn't he a restricted free agent, Butler?
Yeah, but I think if they do re-sign him, it's going to be because of the bird rights that they have with him. I'm not positive.
Do you get bird rights after your restricted contract, though? I mean, he's playing on his rookie deal, right?
We're talking way past. I don't even know anymore. But okay. I think there's a few, and it only takes one team to be willing to pay for Wade, right? If there's no market for Wade, if he goes out and tests the open market and just says, nobody's paying me as much as Miami's going to pay me, and that's from what we understand is Wade is the Heat's position right now. It's like, yeah, go test the market. Nobody's going to be willing to pay you as much as we're going to be paying you, much as we're willing to pay you, which might be around that range of what you said, $15 million a year. Then in that case, there is no negotiation, right? At that point, it's like, you tried the open market, come back here, and we'll sign this deal. So
yeah, I mean, it's something to consider. And then, you know, what other team is going to be as effective with a 33-year-old shooting guard that doesn't space the floor very well and needs the ball in his hands all the time? I mean, this isn't a knock on Dwayne Wade
right, and
his skill set, but, I mean, this is a team constructed with him in mind and knowing what he can and can't provide. That's why it works so well, because you have a guy like, you know, Chris Bosh, who can space the floor. I mean, maybe – I think I heard Dallas was an option. I believe Monte Ellis is a free agent as well. So maybe – going to a team like Dallas that has a rim protector and Tyson Chandler and a floor
wouldn't that just kill Heat fans?
I mean, I would hate it. I would hate Dirk Nowitzki, spotting up from mid-range jumpers after dishes to him in the low post. I mean, that would be brutal.
And it's really not even an issue of what team should pay him, but what team would pay him, right? Like, right. You just know the Knicks probably shouldn't, but they totally would, right? So, the ultimate payback for stealing Pat Riley.
Ah, yeah.
But we both think that Wade's staying.
I think so, yeah.
We disagree at about a $3 million rate per year, $9 million overall. Deal. But, yeah, chump change, no big deal. Like you said, you mix that in a few days with Lenny.
That's right.
So, anything else you want to add, David?
No, it's a far cry from where we were a couple of weeks ago when we thought the biggest problem was whether or not we'd get Luol Deng back, and we were talking about the Jay Crowder era beginning here in Miami. And now all of a sudden we're talking about losing arguably the best player in team history, right?
Not even arguably. The most important player in Heat history, no doubt.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is an interesting difference, a very stark contrast that we're having this conversation, but at the same time, in a couple weeks, this whole podcast could sound ridiculous. Which is a good reason to keep listening to The Heat Check. And you can listen to The Heat Check on iTunes, on SoundCloud. Visit the website, heatcheck.blogspot.com, or heatcheckpodcast.blogspot.com. I still haven't gotten that right in like 3 episodes. Rate us, review us, say nice things about us, and keep subscribing. We really do appreciate all the support and you guys reaching out on Twitter, and it's been a lot of fun. So great job as always, David.
Thank you so much. That was a really smooth transition there. I really appreciate that.
Only the best on the East End. I gotta wait till I skype.